Hello?
The medicine.
I think that's already used.
We've got our own.
History never repeats.
Yeah, we're saving that for the special.
Outtakes.
Our live show.
Yay!
I wonder how much of this we can use.
Oh, we could probably use a whole lot. How much would we charge for tickets, though?
I don't know. First, you get on with the podcast, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, alright.
Alright.
Hi!
Hang on, we're going to do the intro.
Okay.
Alright, hang on.
I got excited, sorry.
Okay. What the... Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly podcast full of bite-sized bits of awesome history to make you say, What the History? I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and the giggly one is...
Susie Holland. Okay.
And this will actually be the last episode for 2016. We're probably going to have a little break.
Yep.
But we, of course, will be back in the new year, but more about that at the other end of the podcast. So I think maybe what we should do is talk a bit of what the history stuff. So
what the history indeed.
Susie, what do you have for us this time around?
Oh, I've got a bit of a strange one again. You know, I've got the reputation of this. I'm going to talk about a very strange house in San Jose, California in the USA. Now, this house had 8 rooms when it was first built in 1884, but now has 160 rooms. Nothing strange about that, I hear you say. But what if I told you that the house was expanded upon in an effort to keep the spirits of the dead away, according to one story, and that the female owner was a secret Freemason in another story? What the? A secret Freemason. I like that. I like that one better. But anyway... Now, the female in question was the very wealthy Sarah Winchester. Nothing to do with the supernatural Winchester boys. Widow of William Winchester, who she married in 1862. And he was the son of Oliver Winchester. And he was the manufacturer of the Winchester repeating rifle, known as the gun that won the West, in quotation marks there. The couple were in love and very happy and were living in New England, America at this time. And now disaster struck in 1866 when their infant daughter Annie died of malnutrition or failure to thrive, I'm not really sure which, and the shock threw Sarah into a deep depression from which she never recovered. And 15 years later, in 1881, William died of tuberculosis, and that deepened Sarah's depression. So Sarah sought solace from a spiritualist, as spirituality was starting to gain a foothold in the US, thanks to the Fox sisters, to help her grief. And what the spiritualist had to say began the mystery of the Winchester Mystery House. And Winchester Mystery House has actually been trademarked as well, so it's got a little TM besides it. That's a whopper in itself. Now, the spiritualist advised a very bereft Sarah that she was being haunted by the ghost of people that had been killed by the Winchester rifle, Civil War soldiers, native peoples, cowboys, etc., and the only way to silence them and make sure that she wasn't the next to die, as the spiritualist advised her, William and Annie were killed by these spirits, was to build a house for them and keep on building. So Sarah left and travelled to California, and she was visiting her niece when she spied land that would suit her and her new house. So she set up a crew of tradesmen, carpenters and designers that would make the spirits happier and leave her alone. In the centre of the house was the Blue Room, and that was Sarah's séance room, where she would commune with spirits who would advise her on which direction the house design should take. Now, for 38 years... Gosh, there was constant building, which resulted in doors that led nowhere, staircases that led nowhere, on steep angles, and beautiful parquetry on the floors, and many bathrooms to allow the team of tradesmen to relieve themselves, secret passageways, a staircase of 7 flights that only rose 9 feet, and the stairs are only 2 inches high. Rooms with many fireplaces, chimneys that don't reach the ceiling, stairwells that stop at the ceiling, and Sarah never slept in the same room twice in a row just to confuse the spirits. And the building never had any plan or any inspections done, but every morning Sarah would meet with her chief designer, John Hansen, and together they would add more ideas or design redesign rooms that were finished only the week before, usually meaning that they were simply ripped up and started again. Only 160 rooms remain of the 500 to 600 that were built. And of course, when a room was done, gorgeous rich furnishings were placed in there because Sarah was absolutely loaded. So, yeah, why not? And it seems also that Sarah was obsessed with the number 13. And now there is a special name for that. It goes for about 25 letters, and I can't remember what it is. But anyway, there were many windows with 13 panes, 13 bathrooms, and 13 windows. And in the 13th bathroom, there was 13 steps leading to that bathroom. There are also 13 steps on many of the stairwells, 13 hooks in the blue room so Sarah could store her 13 robes when she communed with spirits, 13 rails by the floor-level skylight in the South Conservatory. Now, the carriage entrance hall floor is divided into 13 cement sections, and Sarah's will has apparently got 13 sections where it's signed 13 times. Yeah, I reckon obsessed. Or scared, one of the two. At the time of Sarah's death in 1922, the mansion was 6 acres and had 160 rooms, 2,000 doors, 10,000 windows, 47 stairways, 47 fireplaces, 13 bathrooms and 6 kitchens. Carpenters even left nails half-driven into the walls when they learned of Sarah's passing as a bit of a tribute to her. And what about that Freemason story? Now, Sarah was reported to have grown up with family members as Freemason, having been influenced by their teachings, along with Rosicrucian and Francis Bacon-esque teaching and his language of numbers. Now, it's been suggested that the house is a massive interdimensional puzzle, and it's up to us left behind to solve it. Now, with this in mind, the house is a labyrinth and puzzles needing to be solved before new learning can be discovered, much like the degrees in Masonic teaching, as Sarah was exposed to, studied, and was very interested in. It's worth noting that Richard Wagner, the author of an article about Sarah Winchester and the Masonic teachings that I was referring to just now, dispels the story of the so-called spirit house. Whatever the truth is, we may never know. And Sarah didn't keep any journals, and she didn't give interviews either. So no one ever knows, or never don't know, why she built the house the way she did. Either way, this story is very interesting to me and to our son Josh, who actually suggested me to do this story. So thank you, Josh. Now, Sarah Winchester, crazy or pure genius? Well, I think she was innovative and a smart woman. And yes, the house is open to visitors. Click on the link below to see the awesomeness for ourselves. I know if I ever go to the US, I'll definitely visit. It sounds interesting. I just want to see the floors and the designs and the pretty and, yeah.
Can imagine it. Why not? Probably would be easy to get lost in.
Yeah, I would get lost. I'm a bit directionally challenged at times.
Rightio. So a massive house built to confuse spirits.
And to quieten them.
And to quieten
basically
them.
Basically to shut them up so Sarah wouldn't be next.
Fair enough. I have absolutely no segue from that to mine, so I think I won't even bother trying.
Supernatural people will get this.
Okay, that's not me then.
Vicky, you will totally get this.
Excellent. Impala,
impala. So, okay.
The Supernatural Boys, they aren't Canadian, are they?
I don't know.
Because if they are, that would give me a segue.
Or you can pretend they're Canadian.
Okay, let's just assume the guys from Supernatural are Canadian.
Trev doesn't know anything about Supernatural.
And we can talk about something that actually involves Canada. Now, this is interesting, though. Territorial disputes can be very messy. They've been the cause of many a violent conflict between countries and often led to great tragedy, bloodshed, and loss. But what if that disputed territory was a barren rock, and the countries involved were more generally known for their peaceful and well-meaning nature? Well, then you end up with the long-running dispute over Hans Island. What the history?
Has it got anything to do with Han Solo?
No.
No.
No. It is located pretty much right in the middle of the Kennedy Channel in the Narrow Strait. This separates Greenland, which is ruled by Denmark, and Ellesmere Island, ruled by Canada. And Hans Island is approximately a 1.3 square kilometre rock with nothing much in the way of natural resources.
No trees, no nothing.
So why is this island disputed? Well, when Denmark took over Greenland in 1815, they pretty much assumed they controlled much of the Arctic region. At that stage, the area around Hans Island was very poorly mapped and was only really known by the native Inuit tribes. However, the sale of Alaska and the establishment of Canada in 1867 greatly increased both British and American interests in the area, and the discovery of Hans Island was attributed to a Greenlandic explorer, Hans Hendrik, who was working with the Anglo-American expeditions from 1853 to 1876. So even the country that gets credit for finding it is a bit murky.
Sorry. I love this story.
It's great. When Canada was given sovereignty in 1880, along with control of the British Arctic Territory, mainly to keep it out of the hands of the Americans, poor old Hans Island wasn't actually included, largely due to the less than accurate maps from the very difficult task of mapping the Arctic at the time. It wasn't until the 1920s that Danish explorers accurately mapped Hans Island and its location, right on the border of Greenlandic and Canadian territorial waters. Well, it was more of an overlap at the time that it sat in the middle of. Since the Danes mapped out the island, pressure was applied to declare Hans as part of Greenland. The claim was taken to the Permanent Court of International Justice, which ruled in favour of Denmark in 1933. At that time, however, the Permanent Court was beginning to dissolve and would no longer exist in the wake of World War II. This meant that, due to Hans Island's remoteness, and the decision of the court being rendered obsolete, its ownership was once again in dispute. In fact, in the face of more pressing concerns, both Canada and Denmark did not worry about Hans Island for almost 40 years. It wasn't until territorial negotiations were undertaken from 1972 to 1973, where the countries pretty much agreed to split the maritime territory straight down the middle, that they were still unable to agree on what to do with Hans Island, leaving it an undecided area with the waters to the immediate north and south marking the territorial boundaries. This has led to the most genteel, ongoing territorial dispute of modern times. Naval crews from both countries regularly landed on the island, erecting markers and flags to claim the territory, only to have the other side come, take down the flag, and set up their own. This escalated, though, in 1984. There's my serious voice.
Oh, sorry.
The escalation of this territorial dispute. The Danish minister for Greenland accompanied a crew to Hans Island. Now, along with the traditional marker and flag, he left a sign proclaiming, "Welcome to Greenland," along with a bottle of Danish schnapps.
I love this guy.
Canada responded by leaving a "Welcome to Canada" sign on their next visit, along with a bottle of Canadian Club whiskey. This conflict, which is still going, has become known as the Whiskey War. And I've got to say, it's probably my favourite war ever. Now, in 2006, another player entered this dramatic conflict.
Dum, 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 dum.
According to the Nunatsiak News, I apologise if I butchered that pronunciation,
yeah.
27-year-old Kavan van Ooft, an engineering student at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada, declared himself the Prince of Hans Island, which he then renamed Tartupaluk, meaning the Greenlandic name for Hans Island. He chartered a boat to the island and declared its independence on August 13, 2006. He even went as far to set up a now-defunct government website for Tartupaluk, complete with a constitution, charter of rights, details of the currency, and a call for people to become residents. Despite allegedly receiving hundreds of applications, academics and the governments of Denmark and Canada ignored his claim, and it appears he's had no impact on the Whiskey War.
Let's go.
What the history.
What the history, indeed. I love that story. I think it's gorgeous. You can't go wrong with schnapps and whiskey.
Fair enough. Well, look, any war where they basically leave gifts for each other is a good war in my book. Yeah. So,
Denmark... No, I don't think it was a gift. I think it was more, you know, asserting authority.
No, I think they were just leaving gifts for each other, personally.
Oh, God. I love it. It's cute.
Absolutely. And that is What the History for this fortnight. Now, like we said earlier on, this is the last one for the year. You're probably not going to get another one next fortnight. We'll probably be coming back towards the end of January, early February, most likely. Haven't really narrowed that down yet, but it'll be around that time.
Yeah, I reckon mid-January.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. I'll be at Woodford for the last part of the year, so yay!
Woodford's a thing that happens near Brisbane. It's a big music hippie festival.
We can sometimes call it Feral Fest.
Yeah.
Or Mudford, depending on how much rain you get. But yeah, it's a massive festival that goes from the 26th of December to the 1st of January. And it's just a great festival. Everyone gets together, listens to music, chills out, has a great time.
And we are not sponsored by the Woodford Folk Festival.
God, no. God, no. Hell no. Hell no. We're not really sponsored by anyone, so if anyone wants to be our sponsor, come on in.
And because it's just before that most magical time of the year, you know a great free present for someone would be to tell them about a cool history podcast that doesn't take up a lot of their time.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes.
What a great gift.
That would be a perfect gift. So, until next year, happy holidays, or however you prefer to be wished.
Merry at Christmas, this jolly happy time. Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa.
I'd say happy holidays.
It's nice happy everything. Happy everything. And we'll catch you
next year with more facts to make you say, What the history.
Good night, everyone. Happy times. Have a great New Year's. Don't drink too much. Oh, why not? I will be.
I think we need to end.
We need to end. Okay.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.